interview for the North Carolina Politics Project series of the Southern Oral History Program at UNC Chapel Hill. This is an interview with State Senator Betsy Lane Cochran, who is currently the minority leader in the North Carolina State Senate. The date is Monday, October 23, 1995, and the interview is being conducted at Senator Cochran's home in Advance, North Carolina. This is cassette 10.23.95-BC. My name is Joe Monnier, M-O-S-N-I-E-R. Senator Cochran, to start, and I may raise my voice just a touch so that the mic gets it a little from this end, if you could just sketch your basic biographical background, childhood, education, move, say, here, and then I'll pick up the political story after that point.
Well, I am State Senator Betsy Cochran. I'm a native of Asheboro. I attended the public schools there, both elementary and high school. Left Asheboro to go to Raleigh to attend Meredith College, where I majored in history and elementary education. Upon graduation from Meredith College, which is an all-girls school in Raleigh, married and subsequently taught school 11 years, raised two children, a son and daughter. Along the way, was active in politics to the extent that I was active for other candidates. I've always been very active in my community, bond issues, women's clubs, civic activities, very active in my church. I had a broader base of support than would have ever imagined on my own when in 1980 I was talked into running for the North Carolina House, and I literally was talked into it. I filed for the North Carolina House on the last day when the filing closes at noon. I had been a Reagan delegate to the National Convention in 1976 as a young mother and wife and political activist in my community. My parents had been political activists in that my mother was a registrar in the precinct where we lived, and my dad always helped to count ballots on election day. So talking about politics around the kitchen table at mealtime was not an everyday occurrence, but certainly not an out-of-the-ordinary event at my house. Perhaps that had something to do with my interest in history. I couldn't really tell you. I just always had an interest in history and always knew I wanted to teach school.
Let me ask about some of your earliest political activities. I've seen from press clippings and so forth that your parents are both Democrats.
Yes.
Their daughter became a Republican. What led you, when and why, to make that move? Although, from the descriptions I've read in those clippings, your father sounds like he was a close kin of the old-style fiscal conservative Republican.
Yes, yeah. I think there are two reasons that I'm Republican. Perhaps three, but my husband was a Republican. And I've always felt I joined the party whose philosophy was more closely aligned with what I'd always heard my father say that he believed. And I think you are correct in that he was an old-style Southern Democrat, in that he was very much a fiscal conservative, believed very much in the rights of individuals, and not in so much government, either government control or regulation or government programs that, you know, subsidize so many things. So, yes, I would say between a husband that you're sort of joining with what he is and joining a party whose philosophy was comfortable to me caused me to be a Republican. Mm-hmm. I think there's also an influence there in that Jim Holzhauser was someone that I knew before he became governor. And that had some influence on me also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'll ask, I have some questions further down the list here about, because I know that you participated in the 72, Governor Holzhauser's 72 campaign. Were there any important personal ramifications for you
registering in those days as a Republican in a state so heavily Democratic?
Because I was so politically naive, I was not aware of that. I'm not sure I would have thought about that anyway. I'm not a very political person. I'm an issues sort of a person. I'm a philosophical-based sort of a person. Not anticipating running for office, it certainly made no impression on me that this was a foolish thing to be choosing to do. There's no question that my running in 1980, if I had been a Democrat, if I'd been getting elected as a Democrat, it might have made a very different role for me in the short term of my service in the General Assembly. Those were not a part of my decisions. What the party stood for, what I personally believed, is why I chose the Republican Party, and none of these other peripheral ideas about what's politics or what's political or what will this do to you if you run for office were not a part of my decision.
As the 60s unfolded, obviously a decade of so much tumultuous history, the civil rights movement unfolds, the women's movement follows thereafter, and there's a great deal of Vietnam-related protests. Did those sorts of issues reach into your life here in North Carolina and have much of an impact, or were those...
Those issues impacted marginally, I'm going to say, because that's when I was first out of college, first teaching, very focused on teaching, and then in the mid-60s was having, and on over into the 60s, was beginning my family, very focused on child rearing, on church activity, on career building. And those issues were of some importance to me. No question that the Vietnam War was something that we spoke about at great length. Women's issues were of some relevance to me, but because of my own thinking about them, what was happening in the feminist movement was not something I was dwelling on a lot. I was not active at that point in things like the League of Women Voters and those kinds of things, which certainly would have amplified those issues for me. I have been someone who feels an interest in achieving as I am capable of achieving, and therefore didn't go out and ask for feminists to make things happen for me. And I guess because of that attitude, that being young and thinking you could do any and everything, you know, and so many new things in my life with children and new career and all, those were not focus issues at that point in my life.
When and how did you first become involved, say, in local political activities? What sorts of efforts were your first entree, so to speak?
I suppose with the 72 election, because of knowing Jim Holzhauser personally, my children were small, and I would go down to Republican headquarters and pick up those newspaper mail-outs that he got together, and I could bring those home and address them and take them back to Republican headquarters for them to be mailed out, things like that. And because I knew him as a person and admired him as a person, got involved, again, periphery as a peripheral person in his campaign. Certainly not a big fundraiser or anything else, but I was somewhat involved. After that, we moved here to Davie County in 73. Mm-hmm. And I got involved because I just had an interest. In 76, I had been involved in the party up to that point already, and in 76, helped a gentleman run the campaign for Reagan in North Carolina because Reagan really excited me, his conservative views and his dynamic oratory, and I met the man. Mm-hmm. And I was just so very impressed with the man and his answers to some questions that I got very involved in his campaign. And of course, as you know, we carried North Carolina for Reagan in the primary in 76.
Which was kind of an upset.
Yes, and we felt very good about that. You have to understand, we felt very good about that. Became co-chair with the Ford chairman in this county. He and I became co-chairs for Ford in the campaign that fall. Again, because philosophically, I was more comfortable with what I thought he would be as president as opposed to what I thought Jimmy Carter would be as president.
Sure. Can I ask that I'm intrigued by your meeting with Ronald Reagan. Can you tell me about that?
Well, I believe the first time I met him had to do with a Helms event, and that's why I had some entree just to talk. But I also had an event for him here at my home where his secretary, Ms. Van Dam, that wrote the book about him during his campaign, came to my house, and I was actually able to ask her to talk to her and find out personal things. And, of course, I read her book. She gave me an autographed copy from Ronald Reagan since I was having an event in my home for him, even though he wasn't physically present. Read that, and again, just the dynamic man. I think the thing that always impressed me about Ronald Reagan is he is exactly what he appears to be. He honestly believes in this country so strongly, and he is so committed to what he believes that, if you will notice, and I think he proved this as president, he did not change. He was what people thought they were voting for. And remember, I was young and enthusiastic and eager to be supportive of that kind of a conservative person.
Right. Had you been involved in 72 in the Helms campaign?
No.
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 Not in this first race.
No.
Because yeah. It's interesting.
I'm going to turn it on.
Excuse me. I wanted to ask, there were, Holzhauser, a sitting governor, obviously, was the nominal head of the Ford campaign here in North Carolina in 76. Were there
correct.
And it was the emerging congressional club, as I understand, that really rallied to this Reagan victory. Did you find yourself caught between, I know that there was a little bit of intra-party tension there with the congressional club favoring Reagan, Holzhauser, and sort of the established moderate, quote, as people would say, wing of the, or established center of the party favoring Ford. Did that put you in any kind of?
No, because I had not, at that point in my life of party activity, I certainly was not a part of the inner circle of the Holzhauser administration. My knowing him personally, couples with small children knowing each other because we had a mutual friend who served in the Senate, that's how I got to know the Holzhausers. So I would not have been that influenced by his choice at that point in time. I would be responding to my own feelings about a candidate.
What was the experience like of going to Kansas City as a Reagan delegate?
I've got to tell you, it's probably one of the more exciting things I have ever done in my entire life because I was absolutely committed to helping this underdog win. I mean, we were so close, and yet, you know, we knew that that his vote was short of what was needed. But there was a Ms. Hutchins, Snooky Hutchins from Winston-Salem, who was also out there. And I can remember she and I going like to, I think maybe the Louisiana delegation. When we would hear that there were people wavering, you would literally go talk to people to try to convince them to come with Reagan. And when we had these so-called spontaneous parades at the convention when things would happen, you had the enthusiasm to do these things. I have been teased by people who are in the North Carolina delegation when he was making his speech after Ford had been nominated. I'm convinced the speech he gave was the one that had been written to be delivered if he had won. It is truly one of the most stirring all-American speeches I've ever heard, and I literally cried listening to him, thinking what we had lost in choosing the presidential candidate that we did. Now, there's no question we had a more experienced man for presidential purposes in Ford, and I admire him as a man. He is a fine human being. But when I listened to the vision, when I heard the dream that Ronald Reagan was sharing for America, and there was a gentleman who was very active in politics in Davidson County that happened to be sitting beside me. We still work together, and he has never forgotten that little girl, except I wasn't all that little, but I was a lot younger then than I am now, being that moved by someone's speech. But I was listening to the words. I was listening to what he had to say, and they moved me.
Were there key central ideas around which your political ideology really kind of turned? Well, how would you say what beliefs were at the very center of it?
The thing that is very important to me is limited government and the rights of the individual. Those two things are very central to the philosophy that motivates how I vote today as a legislator. They motivate me in choosing candidates to be supportive of along the way. I am conservative. I am very certainly a fiscal conservative. And I thought Reagan had some solutions to things, and that's always been something. I am not content to just be a person who speaks against what is or just finds fault with what is. I have tried to be a productive participant in a process and find a way to modify what's not to my satisfaction, make it more like what I'd like it to be. Mm-hmm. And I just heard some of what he had to say as positive solutions to problems, not just bashing what we might not like.
Right. What was your work like as vice chair of the Davie County GOP? What sorts of things did you stay busy with in that role?
Well, you would occasionally fill in at the executive committees, which were every month. More than anything, I think you are that person that the chairman tells to carry out the plans. Let's say if you're having a Lincoln Day dinner, obviously the chairman does a lot of the planning, but details somebody can work with. There has to be somebody that sort of does follow through and help the chairman. So I think you're a good right-hand person. You're their man Friday, so to speak. I certainly would go with him to state meetings or regional meetings. Was just what I hope was a good support person, because we did have a fine chairman at that time.
After 76, I guess, you became a member of the executive committee of the state GOP.
Correct.
And what can you tell me about, I mean, these were days when I really would like your sense of, from today's perspective, with so many really stunning Republican gains of relatively recent vintage now, I imagine back in 76 it was harder to be quite so, or a little bit tougher to be quite so optimistic. How did things feel back then? And here you are, member of the executive committee, so you're seeing some of the key folks and so forth.
Well, the thing that changes is you know more about what's going on. You also have an opportunity to influence the party to stay on its conservative track. You go to more of the meetings, you meet more of the people from around the state, you have more support there to bolster you, because we were used to absorbing loss after loss after loss after loss. It just got to be the kind of thing you don't take it for granted, because you go into things hopeful that you're going to win. Just like the presidential election day of 76 in Davie County, Ford was doing well enough that even though you had some sense of it was not likely that we were going to prevail, you become more hopeful because of what you see happening in your own county. So that has always been something that helped me stay the course and helped me to continue to believe in what I do and fight for it impacting more people, because I live in a county where there is more of that belief, and we do elect Republicans back when it was not so popular to.
Right. Right. I want to ask a little bit about, I know that you were chair of the Davie County effort on behalf of Jesse Helms in the 78 Senate race.
Correct.
So I want to ask about in the course of being involved on that front, did you come into any sort of close contact with what was then the growing congressional club.
Excuse me. Yes, to the extent that the field workers from the congressional club, you know, would personally come here to the house to bring you things or to talk to you, that sort of thing. What they were doing and what I was participating in, pardon me, was a campaign effort, remember, though. I think you get to know better the people who are in the campaign in your region better than, say, you know, a Carter Wren or a Tom Ellis. You know them, but they are more a superficial force for you because what you know is the regional chairman, say, or the congressional district chairman for Helms, and the field people who are helping you know what to do. And remember, because Davie is a Republican county, your activities and what you are doing would not be the same as, for two reasons. First of all, we're a rural area, so it's a little very different from, say, a Mecklenburg, Greensboro, or Winston-Salem. But also because we're Republican, what we're doing here is different from all many other counties that I can name, particularly down east. We are getting Republicans to go vote because we can certainly make a difference for him in our county since we had a few more registered Republicans than Democrats. The other thing you're doing is working to get to conservative Democrats to get them to vote for Jesse.
Right.
So what you would be doing in Davie County activity would be typical for a Republican rural county, which would not necessarily be typical of what you might know, say, down in Orange or Chatham.
There were a number of big developments in 1980 on the political landscape, including in your life. That was the year, obviously, when you ran for and entered the House. Ronald Reagan prevails in his race against Jimmy Carter, and here in North Carolina, Congressional Club scores a big victory when Senator East upsets Robert Morgan. Can you describe, I'm interested in all aspects of that, but the events of 1980 and sort of what that meant to you?
Well, it was a very euphoric time. There is no question. I very well remember that election night probably better than any other one since, except for the 1982, I guess, because in this area, we elected all five Republicans to the legislature in the district in which I served. That meant all the Democrats were replaced because everybody had been Democrats. It was a very euphoric experience.
So actually five new...
Oh, yes, both the senators and the three House members. Now, one House member had been to the General Assembly before in the late 60s and early 70s, the Nixon elections. That year was a bit extraordinary for me. I think the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life was to go out and ask people to vote for me. I am not your typical politician. I am much more reticent and much more comfortable in the background than is typical of politicians. It took a personal effort on my part, but I wasn't doing it for me, and that's why I could do it. I was doing it for the party in which I believed and the philosophy in which I believed. And so I went out to all the country stores and the barbershops and the beauty parlors and the barbecue restaurants and to the flea markets and all these places. I didn't have money to run a sophisticated campaign, didn't know how. I was just pressing the flesh. Mm-hmm. The thing that was to my advantage is that I was the only woman running. I'm not sure that there was a woman running for anything else at all in Davidson County, and I think there was one running for school board in Davie County maybe. But that helped me. The uniqueness of being female in 1980 helped. It would not help so much now. I'm not sure that I really expected to win. I'd gotten talked into running so that the ticket would be full. And I really thought that my being out there campaigning was pushing Republican philosophy. And it would make the Democrats who had been in, they were running for their sixth term, their fifth term, and their third term, those three fellows, just make them aware you need to get out here and talk to the people about issues and get some sense of how really conservative this district is. So I think that was more my purpose than ever expecting to win.
Let me ask you to share your broadest perspective. As the 80s unfold, and then now more recently, we see this really tremendous restructuring over in Raleigh. And it's, of course, not simply a North Carolina phenomenon. This is happening across the country. What would you say at root, what factors at root explain this realignment that we've seen here with the Republicans coming to the fore in the last decade or so?
I think the seeds were planted in 1980. I do not think they just came as of this election. I think the conservative movement that started in 1980, led by Ronald Reagan, which had been started earlier than that by Barry Goldwater, I think that was the beginning of it. And I think there was a core of conservative Republicans out here and even conservative Democrats, many of whom have since changed party, some who didn't, but they still believed in limited government and the rights of the individual. I think that core group never wavered. I think they continued to work. I think we began to pick up, you know, a commissioner here, a school board member there, a legislator here, a sheriff over there, county commissioners. We began to get county commissioners in counties we had not had before. And I think this growth kept going, and we kept building on it. And I think we began to make more and more people aware of the differences between a party that believes in government doing everything for you and a party that believes in individual responsibility. And I think what you saw this past election was finally coming to fruition, the seeds that were planted in 1980. And the thing that made it all begin was that you had an articulate spokesman in Ronald Reagan who stayed true to what it was that he believed about conservative values. I think also, as we have seen the decline of the family in America, our family values have stayed true as conservatives, and that has attracted people. They know what they don't want, and so they're willing to give us a chance. And there's no question we have begun to raise more money, to find it easier to recruit candidates of a quality that the people want to vote for. Success breeds success. And so I think that happened. And let's also look at some of the articulate spokesmen like a Jim Martin that we got in North Carolina, and some congressmen that we were electing along the way, like a Howard Coble, a Cass Ballinger that moved from the Senate to the Congress. As we had more and more credible Republicans that more and more citizens saw and were pleased not only with what they heard them saying, but how they knew they were voting, both in Raleigh and Washington, and at the local level at the courthouse, I think that's been the growth of the party. That and our working at the grassroots, getting people registered and believing in our philosophy.
Do you think that this profound reorganization was inevitable? Did it turn, for example, what if we hadn't had a Ronald Reagan? Were the forces still in place to move? I mean, in other words, how much was this something that related specifically to these personalities, important as they were, no question, or is there some more enduring kind?
Well, I think there's some other things, but I think there's no question. Having a spokesperson like a Ronald Reagan, who not only espoused but lived and believed what he articulated, that certainly is a help. I think the Jimmy Carters of this world, who let the Haitians come in and all these other boat people, and word begins to spread from Florida up, you know, look what has come in here. When things happen that show all this government that people do not want, when the national view of the Democrat Party was changing, different from what the Southern Democrat Party had been, that conservative Southerner could be comfortable in a Republican Party. So, yes, I think the two things, the fact that we had an articulate spokesperson who was saying what Southerners believed, And when the national perspective of the Democrat Party became more liberal for Southerners to see and to hear on nightly television and wherever, it made our philosophy more acceptable. Mm-hmm. It didn't mean a change, massive change in registration initially, but it certainly made a difference when they would go in to vote.
Right. Let me ask this question. In your 1980 election to the House, did you go with what would you say were your key concerns that you took with you to Raleigh, other than the ones you've mentioned, or is that largely you wanted to carry forward the conservative philosophy into?
Well, that, but I had three issues I had campaigned on. There is no question that people knew what they were getting when they voted for me. Because I'd been pretty consistent in the campaign. I still get teased sometimes by a radio guy from over in Lexington when he sees me and says, oh, there's that Republican candidate for the North Carolina House. I had three issues that I talked about frequently that others were not talking about at that time. One of them was education. I had taught school for 11 years, and I had some pretty definite ideas about education. It was not the glamour issue in 1980 that it became. And so some of my commentary about education, I was concerned about teacher training so that people were equipped when they went into the classroom to do the job parents expected. I was concerned about the students who were coming to school with a lack of respect for authority and not much motivation to learn. There were some various things I talked about education. That was one of the issues, and that was different from the other people. I was also talking about preparing for the aging of our population. There was an obvious increase in those people who are living longer and making demands either on government or families, and families were smaller, families were more scattered than they had been in the past. So I was talking about some aging issues. And thirdly, I talked about water. I do not believe in interbasin transfer of water, and I said so. So I think, and I took those to Raleigh. Those issues went with me to Raleigh, and I have stayed pretty involved in those issues all along the way. I have sort of expanded the water issues a little bit to some more environmental issues, but protecting our water supply was and is significantly important to me.
Is that, I'm ignorant of that issue largely. Is that something that was a particular concern here in Davie County?
Well, not especially, except that we have a good water supply. And we were beginning to hear talk, well, even then you were beginning to hear talk about Randleman Dam and people have needing water in a city, and therefore they're going to take it from somebody else. Well, who are you going to take it from? You're going to take it from people upriver from you. So us being in a position of having adequate water supplies and being right here on the Yadkin River and everybody knowing about the Yadkin River. And there is a pretty strong feeling in our area of Davidson, Davie, Rowan County, this part of that we do not support interbasin transfer. I don't think maybe a part of it was the very fact that I took a stand on some issues, and the fact that I had some issues made me a little different from just everybody running, especially a first-time person running.
Let me ask about your first impressions and experiences as you arrived in January of 81 in Raleigh. And this is a General Assembly that is controlled, has been for ages, and is controlled pretty firmly by Liston Ramsey.
I think there were 18 of us in the House, and I'll have to tell you that is true culture shock. Now, I never felt all that important. Please understand, I really did not feel all that important. In fact, I was quite awed at going to Raleigh, truly awed. And I was absolutely convinced, and I still feel a lot this way. It is such a sacred trust that you have been given. I felt absolutely convinced if somebody stood in line on the floor of the House, lightning would come down and strike them dead. I mean, it really... I use terminology like that to try to impart to you just how it feels to me to be there, even more so then, because I really was very new to this process. I could not believe that I had been elected to be in this august body. I really was overwhelmed with the responsibility. But the thing that absolutely shocked me was the treatment that we got, because, you know, hey, I got elected just like those people did. I represented the same number of people that those folks did. Now, I tolerated it better than some, not as well as others. There were Fridays that I would go home and I'm thinking, I am not going back. God didn't mean for anybody to tolerate this kind of mess during the week.
What were some of the ways in which, can you just describe?
Well, Republican bills did not necessarily even get heard in committee. I served on a local government committee where of what I perceived to be a really bad local bill just got voted out of the committee because I think it was a Democrat from Mecklenburg County. Then here came a little Republican woman from Forsyth County, and there was a little controversy associated with her bill, just like there had been the one before that. Hers didn't get out of committee. And I had something to say about that. I did not understand. And I had this big Democrat from Mecklenburg County sitting across the table from me to say, Betsy, I'll talk to you after the committee meeting. You know, very patronizing. But he really meant it kindly. He really was going to explain to me what it was hard for me to understand, that right is right and wrong is wrong. He was going to show me these shades of gray that I found very difficult to understand. That's one example. People were personally better to me than many, because
many other
Republicans.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because I introduced very little legislation. I listened and learned the process. I didn't come down there feeling anointed. I did work my way up, so to speak. They could respect me because I respected the system and was trying to work within the system for productive gain. I studied a lot. I read a lot. I didn't just spout off. I began to be listened to because I would have reasons for why things should be one way or the other. And I made a lot of notes, so when I would come, I knew what I was talking about and I could refer back to things. But it was very, very difficult being a Republican. I don't remember any problem with being a woman. It was just a problem being a Republican. But as long as I was down there, there was one less of them. So I went back on Monday morning.
And you won again in 82?
Yes. Now, that was a very traumatic election because they used Social Security against Republicans, just like we're talking this time with Medicaid and Medicare, and it was wrong information, erroneous information. I could not believe the hypocrisy of that campaign. And I was the only Republican, I believe, elected to anything over in Davidson County that year over a national issue, not a local issue, not a state issue, but a national issue, which was not true.
So the rest of the Republican delegation did not get...
They stayed home. I was one Republican and four Democrats. And it was not a happy 2 years for this camper.
Mm-hmm. And yet, across this time, you're obviously making quite an impression. There were efforts to draft you to run in 84 for the lieutenant governorship. Can you tell me a little bit about that and your thoughts about
again,
stepping to that level?
Well, I can tell you why I didn't do it. As far as my getting to that level, I think it's because I would do my homework. I did not just mouth off. I had things to say that were logical because I recognized I had no clout except for reason and logic. And so I tried to be a student of the issues, study the legislation, know why I was supporting something, why I was opposing something, why I was proposing modifications, why I needed it. When I was approached to run, there were two reasons I did not, and one was really the most important, and it was pure and simple. I didn't have the money to do it. I had one child ready to go to college. I had another one that would be going in 2 years. My family simply could not absorb that kind of a debt, and I had no promises of... Nobody could make promises that would help me to know that there would be any money forthcoming if you lost or won or whatever. You couldn't know. But I did know I didn't have any money, and I knew it was going to cost money to run. I couldn't absorb the debt for the sake of my children and their college. I couldn't have lived with that. I simply could not have lived with having prevented my children's ability to go to college because of my personal choice to go for higher office. The other reason was, quite frankly, I'd only had two terms in the House. I was not that ready, emotionally or intellectually, to have gone for a statewide office. But I do think I probably did not give it the appropriate thought intellectually like we're talking about, because I just didn't see how in the world I could do it financially.
Who are the key persons trying to convince you to take that step?
Congressman Jim Martin, who was looking to run for governor. And I've always felt sorry about being in a position to not respond to him. I would have loved to have been on a ticket with him, and I think it would have been a wonderful campaign situation for the two of us. And I wanted so much to help him. Not that he needed my help. As I saw it, he didn't need my help, and also as the election proved, he didn't need my help. But I would very much like to have done that, but I had a family responsibility that I simply could not see doing. I could not see a way out of it.
In 1985, you're the first woman ever chosen for a leadership position in the North Carolina General Assembly. How did that come to pass, and how did that feel?
It was awesome. It was an awesome responsibility. I had the support of many of the incumbents that I had been serving with for 4 years, who saw the potential of our picking up seats and that we were going to need somebody willing to work. I've always been willing to work. I'm a very inclusive person. I was very helpful to the freshmen. For the very first time, we had a Republican freshman orientation. After session started, we had orientation sessions where I would take them to the library and get the librarian to show them how things worked. I did a lot of things to try to help the freshmen learn the process so that they could be as productive as possible. We had regular caucuses. I had bylaws. We did a lot of things that had never been done before. As to my being the first woman in leadership, I think that's the thing that I find troublesome about the Democrat Party having this persona of being for women. I know from hearing the senators talk when I was in Raleigh my first term that if Governor Hunt had really wanted ERA, he could have gotten it. So it appears to me there's a lot of rhetoric in support of women by the party that says it's for ERA, but my party gives women the opportunities to do what they have the capabilities of doing, and they're very supportive. Mm-hmm. I recognize that we are a younger party, so we don't have all these people standing in line. That makes a little bit of a difference also. But I would say that my party will give people the opportunities if they go for them and if they have the capabilities to mm-hmm. do them.
Mm-hmm. The 84 election obviously bumped up the number of Republicans in the State House considerably.
Yes.
You gained 19 seats.
Yes.
So you had 37, I believe.
Yeah, 38, because then the next year we dropped two and we were back to 36, my second term as minority leader. But yes, that was a significant increase. Because, see, we had more freshmen than we had incumbents.
And Ronald Reagan obviously wins handily for a second term. Is it feeling by early 85 that there's some momentum building? Did you feel it by that time that, you know, we might really go places here?
Well, some of us did. In fact, I'll share something with you. And again, we're putting an awful lot of things on this tape that I'm not sure I ought to be doing. But I went to the party leadership as minority leader and indicated to them that we really needed to be focusing on the legislative races so that when we redistricted in 91, that we would have a significant presence in that General Assembly. We needed to have, even if we were not in a majority, we needed to have as many people as possible and as many with seniority as possible so they would be significant players in the process. And I think we went after judges, as I recall, because my comment to the leadership at that point in time is, fellas, we can change the laws in the General Assembly to take care of these judges if you'll just give us the help to take more of the legislative seats. So, yes, I think a lot of us saw that we had the possibility to do more with legislative seats if the party would help us financially and help us with recruiting.
Mm-hmm. And who were the, when you say the party, at that point, who were the
Well, Jack Hawk was the chairman. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty confident that I talked to Jack Hawk and Governor Martin. I don't know mm-hmm. others, but I think I talked to those two.
Mm-hmm. Were there experiences during your two terms as in that role that you think are particularly illustrative of your general experience as the first woman in that role? Or how would you describe his general character in terms of your being a woman having...
Again, I don't know that it made all that much difference. I would say the plus side to it is that I was treated by the men on the Democrat side, the leadership, in a gentlemanly fashion, and I was treated with respect because of the respect I had won on my own before becoming a minority leader. My style may have been something that they could contend with also. I didn't fight every day. I came on the floor. My contention was you choose your battles, and they should be significant, and you should be making points. Now, obviously, you may fight in the committee or wherever, and somebody probably was bashing and gnashing every day on the floor. But I did a lot of planning about debate. I did a lot of planning about amendments. Tried to be as prepared as possible. And the thing that I already knew about Liston is, for instance, that some people forget. People would go in and talk to Liston, come back out. He likes it. You know, he's with me. He's going to support me. And I'd say, did he say he supported?